What are we gonna talk about this year?
It's not just about what's going on the track. It's everything that happens off the track.
As recently as 3 years ago, when American motorsport fans thought about racing, they pretty much only thought about NASCAR. But all of that changed in 2019 when the show Drive to Survive dropped on Netflix. Seemingly overnight, a legion of new Formula One racing fans were created. Suddenly, friends of mine who previously had no interest in racing were hooked. With the fourth season of Drive to Survive premiering this weekend, and with F1 back on the track for a new season beginning March 20th, we wanted to talk to somebody about the explosion in popularity for both the sport and the show.
Drive to Survive's success in season one was born out of the issues that the production team experienced in making it.
This is Will Buxton. He's a reporter and digital presenter for Formula One and the de facto narrator for Drive to Survive. To hear Will tell it, that first season of the show was a happy accident that created the phenomenon.
The fact that Mercedes and Ferrari wanted nothing to do with it. This is a season where Mercedes and Ferrari are ultimately fighting for the world championship. So the two protagonists for the title weren't in the show. There's no access to their garage, their personnel, their drivers, nothing. So they had to look for stories beyond the traditional, oh, here's how a world championship's won. And from that, I think they inadvertently stumbled on what the success of the show has been, which is the human stories and the things that we can all relate to. All of the characters, the politics, the really interesting things that went on behind the scenes and not necessarily at the top teams, and making them human. I was surprised with how successful it was, but I wasn't massively surprised that it found a fan base in the US. We knew there was a fan base just waiting for Formula One. They just had to be engaged in the right way.
The show clearly needed a big personality to start season one. And as you mentioned, you know, some of the top teams weren't really on board yet. So would it be fair to say that Daniel Ricciardo was really a big beneficiary of the Netflix effect?
I'd say Netflix was a big beneficiary of Daniel Ricciardo.
Can I get you to tell me who you are and what you do for a job?
I'm Daniel Ricciardo and I'm a car mechanic. Alrighty, I got this. I'm gonna nail it. 3, 2, 1. I am Daniel Ricciardo. I was born in Perth, Australia, and I'm a Formula One driver. Sounds pretty good when I say that.
He was manna from heaven. He's such an open, friendly, naturally very, very funny guy. Great looking, his own style, just really fun. But then he pulls the helmet on and completely switches from being this carefree, jokey character to one of the best racers that Formula One has in its field. He's just superb as a person and as a racing driver.
Because of the show, how do you think it's affected Formula One as an actual racing product? Do you notice more excitement and more fan investment? Have you been recognized more?
Yeah, I've been recognized loads. The real noticeable difference was in Austin, Texas last year, mm-hmm. because there's one way in and one way out through a tunnel, and you exit out of this tunnel up the hill and there's a little pathway on either side. And, you know, normally you'd walk out or you'd drive out if you were a driver or a team boss every night, and there's no one there. In 2021, you couldn't move. It was rammed with people wanting photographs, wanting autographs, with everyone, with engineers and mechanics, with journalists, with, wow. you know, with the drivers, with the team bosses. It's like being at a rock concert. Now that never existed before. So that's very, very noticeable. For a lot of people, it's made them perhaps slightly more wary about the conversations they have in the paddock when there's a boom mic looming.
Because don't want to be caught on a hot mic.
Yeah, exactly. Every mic's live. A couple of the things that got caught. It's a bit of a soap opera. There are obviously elements of it which are slightly stretched, but I think that just helps to draw people in and to create that real kind of passion for the characters as well. And, you know, part of that is creating heroes and villains.
I'm glad you brought up the heroes and the villains component. For listeners who haven't yet caught on, I wanted to discuss Lewis Hamilton, who's a 7-time Formula One world champ. He's a celebrity. He's a philanthropist. I believe he was knighted. He was the 4th driver to be knighted.
He is now Sir Lewis Hamilton.
Sir Lewis Hamilton. I love when people are knighted. It's fascinating to me. He's also the only black driver on the circuit. Explain to people how important he's been in growing the sport.
Lewis's influence on Formula One's global recognition, but also the way in which the sport conducts itself, it can't be overstated. He's changed everything. Part of that is through the way in which he races. He is one of the single most gifted athletes our sport has ever seen. He only needs to get that 8th world championship to be one higher than Michael Schumacher, and then inarguably, from a statistical perspective, the greatest of all time. But as you say, he's become so much more than that over the last few years, pushing the causes that he believes in, whether it's to do with race relations and inequality.
When you do have that success, what are you going to do with it?
I'll be damned if I'm going to win all these championships and have all this success and not use it to make change.
It's an odd world. It's an odd sport. It's very elitist. It's very white European sport.
Sure.
And I think Lewis had always felt slightly on the periphery and never quite accepted because he doesn't fit that traditional Formula One mold. And here he was, not trying to fit that mold anymore, but actually changing the sport, changing the conversation within the sport to the things that really mattered to him. And I think it's huge.
All right, so we have Sir Lewis Hamilton, but he's not the only outsized character here, right? Tell us about Max Verstappen.
Oh boy, where do you start? Max, wow. So Max, for those that don't know, is one of the youngest Formula One world champions in history. He's in his early 20s, 24 years of age, just crowned world champion in 2021.
The championship can only be won by one, and it's going Dutch in 2021. Max Verstappen, for the first time ever, is champion of the world.
Broke Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes' run of consecutive Drivers' World Championships in the turbo hybrid era, which has been in place for the last 5-6 seasons. The only driver, other than a Mercedes driver, to win that world championship.
Oh my God, guys. I love you so much.
You have driven like a champion all year. You deserve that. We absolutely love you.
He was a karting prodigy, born to a father who was an ex-F1 driver, a mother who was a karting champion. You know, motor racing was in his blood. He was always going to gravitate towards it, or at least ask to try it out. And it turned out he was pretty good. So good that when he graduated from go-karts into open-wheel racing, this puny little sort of 15-year-old teenage kid, he just turned up and obliterated everybody. He became the youngest driver to win a race in history. And now in 2021, he's a world champion. He is an aggressive, elbows out, take no prisoners kind of racing driver. And some people love him for that. Some people hate him for that. But he has energized an entire generation of Formula One fans.
Well, specifically with Lewis and Max and that rivalry, how is that elevating the sport?
We all love a rivalry. Formula One was built on great rivalries. And I think, you know, we've got a fantastic one for the ages right now because it's two generations. And it's not so much the baton being handed over as the next generation trying to wrench it out of Lewis Hamilton's grip. And that's been wonderful. You know, you have these periods of domination by a certain team. We had it in the 2000s with Ferrari where, you know, Schumacher couldn't be beaten. We've had it over the last few years with Mercedes that couldn't be beaten. And now in 2021, we had a situation where Red Bull had delivered a car, Mercedes had delivered a car, which was pretty equal. Max and Lewis going wheel to wheel. And for the first time, really, Lewis having to fight for a world championship, not against a teammate, but against somebody in different equipment. And what was wonderful, I think, in 2021 was seeing them both try to work each other out Silverstone is a prime example where they famously came together and Max Verstappen ended up in the barriers.
Hamilton's going to try again, this time on the inside, a consummate touch! Verstappen is out of the race and that's a big crash into Cobbs! Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen coming together, Hamilton continues on for the second time this season. Hamilton and Verstappen clash and tangle on the opening lap, but this time it is ending in dramatic consequences for the championship leader.
For me, in that moment, Lewis knew precisely what he was doing. He could have taken the corner normally, but he didn't. He pretty much left his car in the middle of the track, and he gave Verstappen a choice, which was, you can either back out of this, or we're going to touch. And Max didn't back out. And at that point, Lewis knew here was a guy that isn't going to back out. It happened again in Italy.
Once again, it's wheel to wheel, Hamilton and Verstappen, and this time Verstappen and Hamilton have crashed out, and they are both out.
It happened in Brazil.
But he is forced wide by Verstappen, and Verstappen himself has to go off the track. Verstappen forced him so wide, he had to leave the track himself.
And watching these two guys wheel to wheel at 200 miles an hour, kind of play chicken with one another and try to work each other out and be the last one to blink was just, it was exhilarating. It's so thrilling. And so as we come to 2022, they'll both be so much more aware of one another and the levels that each one is willing to push in order to win.
I wanted to talk to you about something that's omnipresent in the sport and the show and is universal for everybody. And it's always sort of lingering there in the background, and that is the danger.
Yeah.
When they get into a 200 mile an hour car, there's an almost fighter pilot mentality.
Anything can happen.
I always think on my family.
All I do is pray for a safe race.
You need to respect the speed, but the second a driver has fear, you need to retire.
And you obviously have to have nerves of steel to drive Formula One. And I am quite certain they have considered their own mortality, and yet they have to put that in the back of their minds every time they climb into the car.
There's a well-worn phrase that you will never find a more singularly unimaginative human being on earth than a racing driver. Because if they, if they spend all their time imagining the myriad of implications of what could go wrong, they would never get into a racing car. It's why sensible people don't.
Yeah.
Of course they're aware of it. You know, they've all been in big smashes. Some will have been injured, others won't have been, but they will all have had friends that have been, and many of them raced alongside, and many of them knew very well Jules Bianchi, who was the last Formula One driver to be killed in a race. And that really wasn't so long ago. Who was a lovely kid and really was seen as the shining star for Ferrari, their future world champion. Charles Leclerc, who now leads Ferrari's charge, was his godson.
Oh, wow.
Here he is now, race winner, you know, the number one guy at Ferrari. And wow. it's a lovely, but ultimately very tragic kind of full circle story.
Yeah, it really is.
We saw with Romain Grosjean in Bahrain, mm-hmm. and I'm sure everybody, whether you like Formula One or not, we'll have seen the footage from Bahrain and that fireball and Roman climbing out of it.
Not only has he survived going through a barrier at 160 miles an hour within a ball of fire, that the heat must have been so extreme. It was a miracle. It was absolutely a miracle.
I want to talk to you about that,
yeah,
Will, because season 3, episode 9, is literally called Man on Fire.
Yeah.
And you bring up Romain Grosjean, and it's just this spectacular crash, Will. And you're in that episode.
There are certain moments where silence falls on a racing track, and you know what that means.
It's funny, I caught a lot of flack on social media for that line.
Why?
They thought it was overly emotional or like a planted line or something like that. And it just came out of the interview that we were doing. It is a truism. There are only a few times where silence, well, pretty much one time when silence does fall on a racetrack, and it's when something absolutely horrible has happened. Mm. And if you've ever been at a racetrack where something truly ghastly happens, you will know what that silence sounds like and what it feels like. And it's just gut wrenching, because at the time where you should be hearing the, you know, the screaming of the cars and the engine note, there's nothing. It's just a complete void of emptiness. And Roman admitted that he did think that was it.
Yeah.
He did think that his number had been called, but then somehow found the strength to pull himself out and say, you know, no, not today. And the big scary thing with that was it was fire.
Yeah.
And you don't see fire, certainly not in Formula One, because there's no refueling anymore. And to see the fire was something you hadn't seen since the 1960s, 1970s. So it was very, very scary, but a testament. A lot of people say he was lucky. Yes, luck played a part in it, in terms of, you know, the angle that he went in and the speed and everything else. But it's also the testament to the incredible amount of work that's been done on safety in the sport, that his overalls allowed him to be in those flames for as long as he was, that the halo, which had been fitted to the car, which is that sort of appendage that goes around the driver's head,
yeah,
meant that when he went through that metal barrier, he wasn't decapitated. Because, you know, 4 years ago, he would have been. That's the simplicity of it. And that just shows how far we've come, even in this short space of time. Roman got out of that crash and then went to the States, where he's had the most incredible season in IndyCar, on the podium, a huge success. The fans adore him. He's sort of taken on this, the Phoenix moniker. You know, he's really embraced the fact that he came through fire. Roman is the toast of IndyCar and doing so, so phenomenally well.
The new season is coming up.
Yeah.
You're preparing to give your passport a workout. What are you excited about? What kind of things should we expect? Which drivers should we be focused on? Give us a little preview.
Oh, man. Honestly, I'm excited about so much. It's me. I'm usually excited about pretty much everything. First of all, the new season of Drive to Survive coming out is going to be great. I think it's March the 11th that it hits Netflix. I've not seen it yet, so I have no idea what on earth I said over the last year. You have all these wonderful stories and all these incredible drivers. It's that wonderful period, and we haven't had it for a long time, where I can sit here, hand on heart, and say, I have no idea what this future holds, because everything's new. So it's a really great place to be.
Well, so there are two races in the States this year, Austin and Miami, and you mentioned the celebrity and the pomp and the pageantry that happened in Austin, but what do you expect from the races in the States?
Miami, I think, is going to be spectacular. I've seen some of the plans that they have for the race. And genuinely, and not kind of overblowing this, I think it could change the game in terms of what people expect from a fan experience at a Grand Prix. Honestly, it's going to blow people away. It just looks sensational. So I'm really excited, really, really excited about Miami. And it just shows the further growth of the sport in the States. There's so much talk already about there being a third race in the States. You know, there's been talk for years about getting a race back to Vegas, which would just be cool. And honestly, I think Miami is going to be, I think it's going to be sensational. And I think it's going to really take a lot of people by surprise how big an event it is.
You are clearly excited. You have now gotten me excited about it. It is an exciting time for the sport and for the show. We started at the beginning. Now we have reached the end. Will Buxton, this was a podium-worthy interview. Thank you.
Thank you.